But I always say, you know, when you find something that works, leave it alone. Don't mess with it. But also, on the other hand, if it's not working, you got to get it to where it's working. You know, there's no point in continuing to do something that's not helping you be successful.
This is The Tournament Code.
So Ashton, it's been a while. We have not done a repeat guest on The Tournament Code until now. We actually have a few other repeat guests coming up this year, and each one brings a little bit of something different to the table. We thought it would be fun to have this conversation because, as you know, we have our premium channel that we've launched that is over at ttc.supercast.com. And really what that is it's stuff like this. It's going to be conversations, recurring conversations with previous guests just about how things have gone, other things other than what's your background, et cetera. Tell us a little bit about where you are, yada, yada. We're still going to talk about important stuff. We're going to still talk about stuff that's important in tournament golf, but that's why we thought it'd be cool to have you on, just to give people a preview. They'll get this full episode, but this is what a lot of our other conversations are going to be on. And on our paid channel, premium channel, we'll have you back over. So if you haven't heard of our premium channel, go check it out. There's stuff with just Cooper and I. There's going to be stuff with Ash, and there's going to be stuff with other players just talking about golf and life, etc. ttc.supercast.com. We charge money for it because we got to pay the bills. We got to keep the lights on. If you've seen any of other episodes, you've seen Cooper's lights go off sometimes because he can't pay the bills because we don't have enough subscribers. So that would help us out a lot. And then I think another thing we've been doing, Ash, and just in general, Putview Books sponsors us. They're awesome. And so we have an opening tee shot. It's the Putview Books opening tee shot. It's a little quiz question, a little icebreaker for us. We know each other well, but an icebreaker would still be fun. Let's talk about the Korn Ferry Tour. The Korn Ferry Tour has had five previous name iterations. Can you name four of those previous iterations?
So I'm assuming, so four previous. Okay, so web.com. Mm-hmm. Nationwide Tour.
Mm-hmm.
Hogan Tour.
Yep.
Nike Tour.
Yep, that's four of them. Can you get the fifth?
I want to try. I want to get the fifth. I want to get all five here. You said get four, so I got that. I don't know the fifth.
I had never heard the fifth. The buy.com.
Buy.com.
I've never heard that one.
That was very briefly, though, I think,
It had to be because I have no recollection of it at all.
Wow. Very cool. We all learned something then.
Yeah. Last time we did some Masters trivia. So I try to keep the opening tee shot a little bit different, help it be something that's not too easy. Let's talk a little bit about where things are for you. So last time we talked, you were playing on the Korn Ferry, had a full season on the Korn Ferry last year. That was when the year prior you had a clutch stretch towards the end of the Korn Ferry season, had gotten in, fortunately, a few events, had gotten some points, got in through reshuffle, made some majorly clutch putts. I believe it was at the Idaho event, the Boise Open, to lock in your status, top 75, give you full year on Korn Ferry. Tell us about what that full year on Korn Ferry was like.
Yeah, so I had 2 years there. The first year was awesome. So many new experiences, so many new challenges. Learned a lot. Kind of felt like I was just learning on the go. Even though I played golf for, 15 years, it's different out there. Traveling every week. And when I say traveling every week, you're going from stop to stop to stop to stop to stop. 5, 6, 7, 10 weeks in a row. You're not going home. You don't get to go and, spend a few days at home, see your coach, see your, wife or significant other if you have one. It's go, go, go. And there, everybody you're playing against is a great player. So I feel like I learned a lot on the go that year and was able to have a very successful year. I went into that season playing awesome golf, getting through Q school, being able to, as a conditional member, kind of work my way into, getting into every event and had just an awesome year. And I think then that off season is when we recorded my episode, my first episode honored, by the way, to be the first return guest. That's pretty cool. But I was kind of coming off of, you know, at the time, you could call it a career year for me. A lot of accomplishments, a lot of things started to pay off. And so that would have been the winter of 2022, we would have talked. So 2023 was my second season, I guess, you know, fully exempt on the Korn Ferry Tour. And it was a real challenge for me. I did not start the season playing very well and just wasn't sharp, wasn't really getting it done, you know, not to my standard or, you know, what the level is on the Korn Ferry Tour. And I had a tough year, tough start to the year. Felt like I did a lot of good things throughout the year to stay in it. Unfortunately, you know, a little bit too little too late at the end of the year. Wasn't able to retain my status, which, you know, was frustrating. But in this game, you're going to have highs and lows, and I really feel like I learned a lot last year. So, you know, right now I'm kind of working, really pushing hard for this fall, which is going to be, you know, my next opportunity through Q School to get back, you know, full time. You know, I'm doing some Monday qualifiers, some different things like that this year. But, you know, this fall is, you know, my chance to get right back. And as challenging as it's been to kind of, you know, stay positive and keep doing the work and not get discouraged, it's been a process that I know has made me better. I know I'll be more prepared when I get back out next season. And I know I'll appreciate it a little bit more. So, you know, like with anything, you know, trying to take the positives, learn from the challenges, from the setbacks. And trying to enjoy the game and take advantage of some opportunities this year and just get ready for the fall of Q School.
Absolutely. When you talked about going into your first full season on the Korn Ferry Tour, you played on and off in some events there, played on and off, obviously, towards the end, playing in finals that year that you got status. But going through your first full season, sounds like you were a little slow off the gate. Is there any particular reason, or is it just like my bad golf just happened to happen then? Or are there things you might have done? What would you have done differently? Like overall, like take last year. Overall, what would you have done differently?
Yeah, I think if you look at my two seasons, 2022, you know, my first year, I came in really sharp, really motivated early in the season. I knew I had to, you know, play great golf to, you know, to shuffle in and to keep playing. I was also coming off of Q School. You know, I felt like I had been playing a lot, and I was kind of just continued that into the season. Coming off of going into my second season, you know, I didn't have to do Q School that fall. I shut it down for a while after the season, just because it's such a long summer playing, you know, like I said, week after week. I shut it down for a while and, you know, probably came back and, you know, was working hard, but not in a tournament setting. There's not a lot to play from November to January besides Q School. So, you know, felt like I was working on some stuff and trying to do the right things, but just competitively maybe wasn't quite as sharp. And, you know, I feel like I was working my way back into it, but it also was kind of snowballing the wrong way for me. And also, you know, looking back, I probably would have addressed a couple things in my game technically that maybe I left alone. Just, you know, for me, I always try to, if it's not broke, don't fix it. I just had a great season. I didn't want to go changing too much. You know, I've always been taught that if, you know, you have success with something, keep doing it. And, but golf's a unique game and that you have to continue to evolve and make changes and continue to address things on the go. You can't ever get stagnant in this game. So, you know, one thing just kind of reflective was just maybe came in not quite as sharp. And then the other thing, maybe just, I think if I did it again, I would address some things and really challenge myself to make some improvements, some new changes that I maybe felt like I could have made in the off season.
To stay sharp in a competitive setting when there isn't that much to play, and especially when you're in Kentucky, there's not that much to play, and you can go down to Florida and play a few of the mini tours, the Florida Golf Tour, or Sunshine Tour is not a bad tour at all as far as getting some competitive events out there and having some decent courses to play. What would you do to stay competitive?
Yeah, and that's kind of one of the things. You know, I was in Jacksonville, and there's a lot of guys, you know, on multiple tours in that area, and I felt like we all kind of collectively did a good job to play, you know, amongst ourselves competitively. You know, get some reps. I think everybody knows that that's important. So, you know, we were getting, you know, doing what we could, but still, it just wasn't quite enough, I would say. You know, there's something about packing your stuff up, driving or getting on a flight, going to an event, playing somewhere, you know, away from your hometown. There's something different about that. And that's something that you have to practice. And that's, it's hard to imagine that I lost that edge in 3 months, but I really feel like in a way that I kind of did.
Yeah. I mean, and when you're playing at a high level, like you are and have been, it's really hard to, you know, take off the time, but it's hard to ramp back up to it. It might be easier to ramp up to, no offense to it, G Pro Tour level or one of the mini tour levels than to ramp back up to Korn Ferry level, especially when you haven't honestly spent that much time up there. It could be a lot to try to get used to. If you've been out there 10 years on Korn Ferry, you're probably a little bit more used to as to what you need to do, where you need to be with your game to prepare. When you kind of look at, all right, so 22 didn't go how we wanted to, Q school didn't go how you wanted to, how did you set the trajectory of your off season? Like of the, all right, well, I'm not on Korn Ferry next year. Should I go do PGA Tour Canada? Should I do Ladin Tour? You didn't. So why did you say, you know, that's not something that I'm going to spend my time or money doing per se?
Yeah. So, you know, kind of going kind of off of my last point of, you know, my last off season didn't really make the changes or didn't really address maybe the one or two things that I probably should have, despite coming off of a good year. So now I'm coming off of a down year. There's no doubt about it. We're going to make some changes that need to be made. And I gave myself time this off season away from the golf course, really, to learn what I needed to improve on, to let the bad habits kind of, you know, hopefully fade away, and to really kind of learn, you know, what I needed to do better and how I was going to do it, and then make a plan and just get to work. A lot of indoor work, a lot of work with Corey in Louisville. You know, was seeing him every week. I haven't seen a coach every week in a long time, but that's what I really committed to. We were going to make the changes we needed to make. And it was tough, and it's still tough because I'm starting to play now. And, you know, there's a reason you get into bad habits, because those are the things that are happening easiest. Or, you know, you're not able to, you know, do the things that you want with ease. So that's how the bad habits creep in. But, you know, really addressing those things, for me, it was improving the golf swing, improving some technical things. And, you know, it's easier to address those things after a down year and when you have some time off. So that was get away from the golf course and just make the technical changes I needed to make.
Do you feel like those technical changes have improved your game?
I really do. I think they're setting me up for some sustained success going forward. I'm really excited about everything we've done. It's been hard, but I feel like I have more ownership over my game now. I know, you know, what I'm trying to do at all times, kind of what happens when it gets off, what's happening when it's really good. So I feel like I have, you know, for lack of a better term, like a blueprint of what I'm trying to do. And I maybe haven't had that in the past. I've maybe been more of a feel, kind of just find it out of the dirt player. And I found just week after week after week on Korn Ferry Tour, you can't hit balls for 2 hours every day to find that feel, to find that shot. You've got to be able to conserve energy and understand how to do it, you know, from a more, you know, understanding perspective.
Absolutely. Looking back, when you go look at yourself as a college player, you were a solid college player, had multiple college wins, which even in the OVC or something, or in that type of conference, it's still hard to win tournaments, pretty much no matter what conference you're in. If you were talking to someone who's coming out of any sort of college golf environment and is they have some sort of status, let's say they have no status or any of that, or somewhere in that category, what would you be telling them? What would you be advising them on as far as, hey, here's what I would do if I were you? Because now you're 7 years down the road right now, so you got a lot of experience under your belt.
Yeah, man, there's a lot I could tell them. The kind of the big things would be to have a plan, have a plan every day, have a plan for that season, have a long-term plan. You know, work your tail off, but also you got to understand, you know, this takes a while. You know, if you're not Justin Thomas or Jordan Spieth or Scottie Scheffler, it's going to take a little bit of time. You can do it, but you got to be patient. You got to know what the timeline really looks like. And we've all seen the numbers on how long it takes the average guy to get to the tour. It's no surprise that it takes most guys a while. Because it's a skill sport, it's an experience sport. It's not like basketball or football where it's you either have the tangibles or you don't. This is a game where you accrue the abilities over time. But yeah, I would say be patient. You got to work your tail off. Be consistent. Find a coach or coaches that you you gel with and that are making you better and that motivate you and just stick with it and enjoy it. If you're enjoying it every day, that's going to take you a long ways. And that's something for me I really focus on now that maybe I wasn't as focused on in the past. Making sure you enjoy it kind of carries you through those tough times and makes it, you know, still feel worth it when things aren't going as well as you'd like. And that's, like I said, there's ups and downs in this game. So you're going to have times like that. So you got to be able to get through them.
Yeah. If your identity is in winning golf tournaments, then you're going to spend a lot of time being pretty sad because you're not going to win a lot of golf tournaments in life. It's not a basketball game where it's almost a coin flip or anything like that. It is a long road. As far as like, let's talk about college. When you were in college, we were teammates for some time. Looking back on college, what would you do differently as a player just developing? And what would you do? What would you tell a college player? Hey, man, here's some pitfalls to look out for. Like the obvious pitfalls that I'll just get out of the way. So you, not that either of us fell in them, but like alcohol, drugs, and girls, like too much girls is pretty much, if you're a male golfer, those are the three things that you can run into. Whenever I see a good junior player, I mean, I hope they stay good forever. I hope they get really good. But when you see an elite junior player, top junior player, 15, 16, everyone's like, oh, he's going to make it to the PGA Tour. Like, man, one, he hasn't fully gone through puberty, so there's a lot of things to happen there. And puberty does not guarantee that you're going to get better. It's your body's completely changing. Your self-awareness is changing in the sense that your hands, everything in relation to your brain is changing. It's not like there's a reason why guys grow a lot and their coordination goes downhill is because their body doesn't know exactly where their brain doesn't know where their body is. But aside from puberty, whenever I see a great player, I'm like, yeah, I hope they stay great. I hope they work hard, but a lot of them are about to learn about alcohol, drugs, and girls. And I never really had a problem with any of those. Girls, because they didn't like me, drugs didn't want them, and alcohol is too much effort. So didn't really have a problem with any of those. But a lot of the people I know who were really good golfers, or I've heard people say, oh, is he going to make the PGA Tour? And people are like, oh, yeah, for sure. I mean, those will derail your career, and it's fine. It's fine to not alcohol and drugs. It's probably not fine to let alcohol and drugs derail your career. But you find a girl, you like her, you decide, hey, I want to work a full-time job and have a wife. No shame in that. Don't get me wrong. I'm just saying that if you want to play on the PGA Tour, you want to play golf at a high level, relationships aren't easy. And I'm not saying you can't do it. There's obviously golfers out there that show that you can do it, but just that relationships aren't easy. And a lot of guys, yeah, I'll leave it at that. But all that to say is you don't have to say, hey, don't do drugs, don't do too much alcohol, and don't hang out with too many girls or anything like that. So we can skip those three. What would you tell a college golfer? Hey, here are some of the pitfalls to look out for that aren't those things.
Wow, you touched on a lot of things there. yeah, you know, I look at it, you know, big picture, you know, the development and anything is it's like a pyramid, it's like a cone. And the further you go, the less people are going to be in the fight, I would say. You know, when we were in high school golf, we all knew three or four guys that were destined to be PGA Tour players. You know, they can't miss kids. You know, I'm thinking of those guys now, and, you know, I still know, you know, a few of them, and they're great guys, and they're doing well, and they're doing, you know, good things, but they're not on the PGA Tour. They got called in different directions, or they met someone and wanted to start a family, or found another passion, or, you know, maybe just found that it wasn't for them. Golf changes a lot, you know, when you go to college, when you become a professional, when you now have been a professional for 4, 5, 6 years, it continues to change, and it asks more and more of you. And, you know, that's for each individual to decide on the go if they want to, you know, live that lifestyle and keep, you know, making those sacrifices, because it keeps asking more and more. And, you know, I think finding the right partner along that path is so, you know, helpful to so many guys, you know, because that gives them, you know, something else to focus on, some support. But, you know, back to your question about, you know, advice to college players, I would say, you know, like I said, you know, be understanding, be patient with the timeline, also be patient with your expectations. You can be really successful in this venture of trying to, you know, be a professional golfer and never make the PGA Tour. Most people don't. And, you know, I've known a lot of guys over the years, and they've gave it a really good run, but they didn't make the PGA Tour. And I would never consider that a failure for them, because maybe they learned so many important lessons. They, you know, met so many great people, had so many experiences that that's going to help them in life going down the road. So I would say, you know, coming out of college, just understand that, you know, if you've made it that far, you've already, you know, outraced so many people. You're now, you know, you were, you know, the top whatever percent out of high school. You're the top percent out of, you know, college now. You know, the field's getting really thin in this race that you're in. And, you know, just, you know, if you really love it and if you really want to continue to make those sacrifices, stick with it. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with giving it your best. And then when it's time to do something else, you know, that time comes for everybody. So I would just say, you know, understand what it's going to require and just understand, you know, manage those expectations and, you know what's, you know, potentially down the road for you.
Absolutely. What would, for guys, let's kind of transition here. We've talked a lot about college golf, professional golf. Let's talk about people who are, let's talk to the mid amateur crowd / amateur crowd. I mean, in that kind of crowd, you talk about playing on the Corn Ferry Tour earlier, talk about how you have X number of events in a row. You weren't sharp coming into the year, but, and you wish you would have had more competitive edge. Mid-AMs, AMs, generally are not as good as professional golfers. I say generally because there's the best amateur golfer is not as good as the best professional golfer. And the best amateur golfer, or at least one of the best mid-AM golfers, let's look at mid-AM because AMs are include a lot of college guys that will end up out there. One of the best mid-AM golfers spends a lot of time playing competitive golf. It's a semi-professional golf for a lot of those guys. And so when you look at other mid-AMs, though, and guys are trying to get ready for a tournament, and they're not going to play 10 weeks in a row. They got their state AM, they got their state open, maybe their state open qualifier. They got their a few club events. They're really looking at 4 or 5 events during the year. If you're going to say, hey, man, I've played in 20 times more tournaments than you have at this point in time, here's what you can do at least to get as competitively ready as everybody else, if not more so. What would you be telling them to do?
First off, I mean, you know, mid-AM golf, I mean, I think, you know, you kind of just think it's a bunch of guys out there hitting and giggling. These guys are competitive. Let's put it, you know, let's start there. I mean, half these guys played professionally, played in college. They're sticks. So most of them don't need much help, but maybe they've got, you know, they work full time. They've got a family. Pro golf wasn't for them. And they, you know, but they still want to be competitive, and amateur golf is a great way to do that. But yeah, they're not going to be playing as much as I am, and they're not able to dedicate as much time to it as I am. So how do they, you know, Cooper and I actually were talking about this earlier today. We played around, and it's, you know, he's working full time now. He's got other things, you know, he's doing the pod with you. He's doing other things, but he wants to still be competitive. He still wants to go out and, you know, we're playing a little tournament on Friday in Lexington. He wants to go out and play his best, but he doesn't have all that time. So we were talking about, what are some ways we can be efficient? We can be, you know, really productive in our practice. You know, for him, we were talking about the putting today. It's like, you know, feel like you got a whole lot of putts to go out and feel like you're going to make them in a tournament. You know, what can he do, you know, with a 30-minute window that he's got to practice? And I think that's something for me, you know, even though I might have all day to do it, efficiency is a good thought. How can I make the most out of my time? Even though I might have 8 hours, like let's not waste time. But
to interject here, you do need more efficiency because you use up all 8 to 12 hours in a day. It is a long day for you.
Yeah. Oh, I wear myself out for sure. But I could probably do in 8 hours what most people do in 4, but that's a whole nother conversation. But no, just being more, you know, knowing what you're trying to do, being more intentful. And then I would say, you know, leading into events, say you've got, you know, one or two events a month during the summer. Play a lot of golf, play a lot of holes as much as you can leading into events. You know, that's super important. You know, I've learned that the hard way, you know, not being sharp going into tournaments. Do whatever you can, be competitive, get your buddies out, go play, you know, do whatever you can and just, you know, find a way to get the ball in the hole and train those skills, those golfing skills. And just so you can be as competitively sharp as you can.
Yeah, I second that. That's something interesting talking about Cooper's game. Might have talked with him about a little bit about this on our premium episode, first one. And Cooper's struggle right now is in putting. And I mean, there's his game's like across the board, it isn't bad, but it's not top notch. But his putting is noticeably and much more easily fixable. And I think the biggest thing in mid-am golf, when I look at it to myself, this year I want to play some tournaments. I have not, I just went out today to Druid and it was no bueno, all over the place. It's like probably the sixth time I've hit golf balls this year. It's just been not a good year for me to get out. Too busy dunking, too busy just balling out. I don't think I told you guys this last night, hit the game winning free throw
big time
in our rec league. Yeah, I'm kind of a big deal about it. So just have not had as much time as I'd want to work on it. And it's just not as big a priority for me. And the biggest thing for me, which I imagine is the biggest thing for every other mid-am, et cetera, is unless you live right on the golf course, it's to me, the biggest pain is the transit time. I live 30 minutes from my golf course, which is pretty close in Atlanta. And if I was going to join another place, I would be living, the closest I'd be living is 15 minutes. And so all of a sudden, anytime you want to go do something, for me, it's tack on an hour, but even if you live 15 minutes, you tack on 30 minutes of time that you're spending non-productive. And it's not just non-productive, especially if you're married with kids. It's non-productive time that you're not with your family. So you're not getting, you're not getting the FaceTime with them. And for Cooper, it's just time he's not in the business, not time he's, and for anyone else like who doesn't have kids or anything like that, it's still time you're spending going around places that maybe you don't need to. And the hardest thing is getting good outdoor time. So for me, the important thing that I like, at least that I'm going to be working on for Cooper, I told him, man, you got to go get a Wellputt mat. Wellputt has been awesome, has sponsored us before. I like, go get a mat. Because especially with putting, like if you're working on technical putting stuff in general, in my opinion, you don't need to be going out there to the practice green to work on technical putting stuff. All your technical work, essentially my full-on argument is all your technical work should happen indoors because you can control the environment so well. You can control everything that's going on. You don't need good weather. You don't need anything other than your time. So you can block that off 100%. And then all your maybe other types of skill work that needs to happen outside, like playing actual golf, that can all happen out on golf course, like working on holding putts. If you can't afford a putt view, if you don't have 20,000 sitting around for a putt view, I'm just, for people who can't see my face, I'm being facetious. Putt views are expensive, but they're awesome. I don't personally have one. Business I know has one, and I get to use it sometimes, and they're super, a whole putt view room. It's awesome. But if you can't have a putt view, if you can't do that in your house, then okay, you got to find a way to be able to practice. Lou Stagner showed a great one about at least like making your own putting green that's adjustable. We've done in-home stuff for practicing green reading. So all that to say is when it comes to practicing for mid-ams and amateurs, I would be thinking, hey, make sure you've taken the necessary steps to do as much as you can at your house so you can spend the least amount of time driving, et cetera, and then get your competitive stuff done. You get competitive stuff. You don't have to just go to the range, but I digress. Cooper's here. Cooper's been here. Yep. Can you hear me?
Coop.
Yep. Yep.
Hey, Cooper.
Cooper had a slight delay in joining us. He was over at the bowling at his business getting ready to get started, and then a customer came in for the indoor simulator, the Cooper's Indoor Golf Simulator. It's not what it's called. It's what my wife thought it was going to be called when he and I decided to do it. And as opposed to being
a few months.
Yeah. And as opposed to being Cooper's sole practice place, it actually has turned into a nice place where people can come and hang out. We ran a fun little Masters Week, pimento cheese, homemade
pimento cheese.
Yeah. The real good stuff. Cooper's like, yeah, the chef there, you know, chopped up bell peppers, sour cream. Like, man, they really went in on it. That's good. I like to hear it. So all that to say is Cooper's indoor practice place is a nice little setup. If you're in Lexington, reach out to him. You can check that out at southlandgolf.com. Is that it, Cooper? So southlandgolflex.com.
Southlandgolflex.com.
Yeah. Okay. Perfect. And back to what we were talking about. Cooper with Ashton. We talked about kind of Ashton's, how things have gone this year, what he would do differently. We gave what he would say to some college kids, what he'd say to professional players. We're just talking about to amateurs and mid-ams, kind of, hey, here's what I would be thinking about as far as practice goes, as far as spending your time goes, because you don't have that time to ramp up. That's what he was talking about with this Korn Ferry event. In the last year, the whole tour, he was just a little slow off the gate because he just did not ramp up well. And he needs to work on doing that better. When it comes to the technical things in your game, Ashton, I know recently we talked about putting. You were down here, and we went to go find the answer at PGA Tour Superstore with my son. We did not find the answer there. But when it comes to something like putting, break down how you're analyzing, hey, here's what I should do to fix my putting. Because your putting was not good the last tournament you played in. It was negative. You lost 6 strokes. Was it 6 strokes for the tournament? 6 strokes per round out there.
Yeah. Thanks for telling everybody. It was for the tournament.
Okay.
You're welcome. Ashton's putting, it was a 2-day tournament. Ashton's putting might be considered bad by tour standards, but my putting is so bad that I was taking lessons from Ashton today.
Oh no. That is bad.
It actually helped a lot.
Taking lessons from a guy who's -6 putting. That's rough.
Well, it's over 2 days. So it's only -3 over 2 days, which is not that bad. That's -6. Yeah. If you were -6 over 6 days, that'd be not that bad.
If I played in that tournament, I probably would have been worse. So I'm improving.
Yeah, we went to Superstore. Didn't find the answer, but Deacon had a good time. So it was a successful trip. But no, sometimes you got to go, you got to go look at the other, options out there and come back home and say, you know what, I got what I need here. But, over the last week, just kind of getting back to some fundamentals for me on putting, some things that you know, I know I'm a really, really solid, consistent putter early in the season. You know, no reason to be overreacting, but you also got to, you know, like I said earlier, you got to make the changes and you got to, you know, be, you know, move on the go. And when things get a little off, you got to make the changes you need to. So that's just part of the process. I'm feeling better, you know, by the day. You know, mindset's a big part of that. And then, like I said, just getting back to some fundamentals and, you know, getting the confidence back.
Yeah. Tell me, like, I think on hole six today, you were telling me, like, you know, you like the putter that you have, but you kind of wish that you had the same exact putter, but without a line on it. Kind of go through like what your thoughts are on like just the line on a putter. Cause I mean, a lot of people don't even think about like, oh, I need a line on my putter, but you know, go through why you think there shouldn't be maybe a line on that putter. And there's a pretty good player in the world that has that same exact putter without a line on it.
Yeah. So I use the kind of Rossi mallet, Odyssey style putter, kind of the rounded mallet. I've used that one or kind of the smaller number five Rossi kind of mallet for a long time. That's just kind of what fits my eye, what I've always used. But, you know, somebody kind of put the idea in my head not too long ago that, you know, maybe you don't need all the lines on the putter. And, you know, so I'm not, you know, trying to drink the Kool-Aid or anything, but I kind of got to thinking about it. You know, the putter's silver. I put some lead tape over the lines and it kind of decluttered a little bit. I kind of was just a little bit more athletic, I felt like, when I put the putter down. I feel like the lines can be distracting in a way. I've read some things that everybody kind of reacts differently to the visuals of a putter. Some people can line up with the leading edge. Some people use the shape of the putter. Some people use the lines and the alignment aids. So everybody's different. You know, that's one of those things that it's, you know, it's worth looking into and giving it a try, you know. So I don't think it's the thing that's going to get me back going, but I think it could be part of just kind of decluttering, simplifying, getting a little bit more athletic look when I set up the putts. Yeah.
No, I was just kind of referring to, I think John Rahm had that putter specially made. He was the first person to have that putter specially made without a line. And I think the following week he won the US Open at Torrey Pines. So that's just what made me think of it.
Yeah. I think you're seeing more and more guys with less alignment aids on the putter. You know, last year on Korn Ferry, you know, I saw a few guys switch to that exact putter, maybe with a dot on top, but with nothing else, just to simplify. We've got enough thoughts in our head. You know, when you put a putter down that's got lines everywhere, it could be distracting. But
I think a lot of people don't know, too, that Scotty Cameron that Tiger used his whole career doesn't have a line on it. It just has a dot.
Yeah, it's got the dot. You know, it's you probably aim a putter pretty good without, you know, without the line. So it's something to think about for sure.
Yeah, I think, I mean, too, for it depends on what people are looking for, obviously, in mm-hmm. their games and what they like to do. If you're a guy who likes to, yeah, but definitely worth trying out for you. When mm-hmm. it comes to the rest of your game equipment wise, how much are you meddling with it and how frequently are you changing it?
I think I always tell people with equipment, you've got to be willing to make changes until you get it right, until you get it where it needs to be. And then you need to understand, this is what I use and I'm not meddling with this anymore. I've played the same driver shaft for, I think, 6 years now. I will not play anything else unless I feel a change needs to be made. I've kind of tinkered with some things that maybe I shouldn't have over the last few years. You know, and that's a risk you take, you know, trying to get better. But I always say, you know, when you find something that works, leave it alone. Don't mess with it. But also, on the other hand, if it's not working, you got to get it to where it's working. You know, there's no point in continuing to do something that's not helping you be successful. So I would just say, if it's working, don't mess with it. But if you know that it could be better, and your coaches can help you with that a lot, and, you know, other people see things, you know, your friends that you play with, you know, you got to be open to having conversations with those people. Like, hey, do you like what I'm doing here? Is the, you know, use a launch monitor, use whatever you need to say, is the ball doing what I need it to do? And if it's not, go make the changes. You've got to be willing to take those chances.
So right now, I think you're hitting a driver, 3 wood, 3 hybrid, then 4 iron, right? You just got that new hybrid, that 3 hybrid.
Yeah, I throw in a hybrid occasionally, kind of golf course dependent. I'd prefer to play a 3 iron generally, but if you're playing heavy rough on a long golf course where predominantly that club's going to get used into greens, you know, a little bit more, you know, ability to get the ball up in the air with a hybrid can really pay off. But yeah, I kind of, you know, driver, 3 wood, 3 iron or hybrid. Yeah.
Yeah. And talk about that mini driver. You use that a lot on the Korn Ferry Tour,
mm-hmm.
but I think you said you maybe started to use it a little too much. Just kind of go through your overall relationship with the mini driver.
Yeah. Mini driver is awesome. I had the burner, the TaylorMade. I saw Callaway's coming out with one. I heard Titleist has a 2 wood out. So it's, and this is kind of what I said. I said this last year to a buddy. I said, you know, these are going to be kind of mainstream in the near future. In 2 or 3 years, every manufacturer is going to have them. And I know you guys have talked about this. You know, 3 woods are
I was
going to
say, and I think we said that to you before then. So
yeah,
double ahead of the curve.
I can't. Yeah. I don't carry 3 wood. I haven't carried 3 wood in years. I was saying to Ashton, if on the courses I play, I don't need a 3 wood. If I was to play big golf courses, like we were talking about this today, Scotty hit that 3 wood a lot at Augusta, but I'm not playing a golf course like that ever, so I don't need one.
You get 14 clubs. It's not the most important club, but to play high level golf, you do need to be good at that. At that spot. But yeah, you know, if you're playing, you know, moderately length golf courses, you know, not the most challenging venues, you know, you don't need a 3 wood too much, or you get a strong hybrid, or you know, now they've got these mini drivers. It's an exciting club. It's you can kind of do some different things with it. You can hit it like a driver, tee it high and smash it. You can tee it low or even hit off the ground and play it more like a low stinging 3 wood. For me, you know, towards the end of last year, I put it in just because it fits some of the golf courses. It fits, you know, for me, a 285 to 290 kind of number that, you know, 3 wood has to be hit like A1 on the money to kind of get that number. And driver, for me to hit a driver 290, you know, I can do that, but I feel like I'm not being as aggressive as I'd like. So it's, for me, it's not a every week club. Some guys play it every week. Jake Knapp's having a ton of success with it. Some other guys, I'm trying to think who else I know plays it. I know Kevin Daugherty plays one. Those are some really long hitters, so they're getting, you know, a lot of speed, and a 3 wood has a big dispersion, tiny face, so it's tough. You know, those guys could probably carry a 3 wood 280. It's, you know, that's a big ask to find the middle of that tiny sweet spot, you know, at whatever, you know, elite club head speed those guys have. So I think they go to that mini driver. They can kind of smooth it out there, and it's a more predictable, consistent look for them. But I think it's going to be one of those fun clubs to hit that, like I said, in a couple of years, everybody's going to have one just because it's fun to hit. And because, like you guys say, 3 woods, you know, 3 woods hard to hit. Let's
even
3 woods hard.
Get around that. Yeah.
And with the mini driver, you can tee it up and hit it like a driver, or you can tee it down and hit it like a 3 wood.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, and even though, even tipping out like a lot of big courses, the compared to a mini, assuming you have a mini driver in the bag, but first off, there are very few shots that you have where you actually derive some sort of major benefit from a 3 wood. Depending on how you're using it, just because the three woods in general, like you can work on it and you get your 3 wood to get up more, but it's not like it oftentimes comes into a green where it's receptive. I would say, and this is not entirely true, but because of launch dynamics, et cetera, but if you can kind of optimize a 3 wood to be hit off the tee, or you can optimize a 3 wood to land on a green, and you really can't optimize it. It just can't do both. It's not made. It's not a club that's made to do both. And it's
no,
not something.
College, back in college, one of my teammates had a 3-wood with a driver shaft in it, and like he never hit it into the greens, but off the tee, that was pretty cool. Like,
yeah, it would fly. Yeah, it's not made. It's really not a club that's made for both. And you can change some mechanics, change a few things, but really, it's not going to be receiving green wheels. So if you think about it, the only time you need a 3-wood, pretty much ever. So if you have a mini, driver, only time you end up needing a 3-wood is in approaches to par fives. And I would argue too, most of your long approaches into par fives with that club, a lot of the times the shot, if you're playing a course where that's actually called for, the shot into that green is so risky that it may not even be worthwhile.
Well, I was thinking about, because I was telling Ashton, I was like, you know, in the Masters, you probably do need a 3-wood. Like hole 8, if I was playing the Masters, I would honestly probably put a 3-wood just for that hole. And like, there's some tee shots that you could hit like 10 if you can only hook. If you can't hook a driver, you want to hook, you hook a 3-wood easier. You can hit that in 13. But I mean, if you're playing a 600-yard hole with no hazards, you probably should put a 3-wood in that week. I mean, I might think about that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of at Daniel's point, like you don't need that shot too often, but like, you know, what Cooper's getting at, if you want to win the Masters, you do. To win your club championship, you probably don't. To win some money on Saturday against the boys, like you don't have to be a great 3-wood player, but you know, the higher you go in this game, and I kind of notice this playing, you know, playing Korn Ferry. Say you got a 420-yard hole. Yeah, you can hit 3-iron or hybrid and have 9-iron in, whatever it might be. But how great would it be to be able to push it up a little bit more with a 3-wood? And you could say, hey, getting it up there 20 yards, it's not worth the risk. But, hey, how much different is it to be hitting a gap wedge in than a 9-iron? And I think at you know, upper levels of the game, that's where really good players are challenged with, is it worth that risk? And, you know, the analytics will tell you, you know, what the answer is there. But, you know, you have to kind of challenge some of those decisions when you're playing at a really high level that the average everyday golfer doesn't need to even worry about that. They need to be worried about getting it in play, hitting driver predominantly most of the time, and, you know, just, you know, keep it simple. But for to win the Masters, you need to be a great 3-wood player. Look at Åberg and Scotty. They were wearing that club out on Sunday at Augusta. And, you know, those guys are, there's a reason they were 1-2 on the leaderboard. So,
yeah, that reminds me of like when we were talking to Marty Jurtson about working the ball both ways and how for 95% of golfers, it's not worth it to try to work the ball into pins. But if you want to win the Masters, is I think the example we used, you know, you're going to need to work the ball into pins with how firm those greens are and how windy the place is.
That's a good kind of comp there in terms of, you know, you got to be at a really high level to start worrying about, can I hit a green with a 3-wood? Is this 3-wood going to stop on the green?
And it's really course, it's really course specific too, right? Because I was just thinking, like, what courses can I think of we've been to where you might be hitting a 3-wood into the green? And one I could think of, Ash, was Olympia. That Olympia Fields, that is one that the greens there, while it's a great golf course, some of the greens there on, well, I'm thinking of the South course too. The South course has a few more. On the North course, two, I forget how tight it was around the green. Because it was reasonably tight around the green there as far as where the tall stuff was. But some of those ones you might be thinking about hitting a 3-wood into. But again, a lot of the courses, like, yeah, you can hit it up there, but you're not necessarily gonna, I don't know, it might not be that much marginally better than a hybrid, all things considered. I think that's a good point for us to wrap up on, unless you guys have anything specific that you guys wanted to cover quickly. Seeing nothing, I want to remind everybody that, one, we have our Supercast. We'd love to have you on and hear more of our premium episodes where it's Cooper and I talking, Cooper, Ash, and I talking, just in general, us talking with past guests, talking about things that are maybe not as interviewee, more just hanging out, talking, learning more from each other, talk about tournaments. That's ttc.supercast.com. If you're trying to find us on social media, you can find us on Instagram at The Tournament Code and on Twitter at Tournament Code. Big thanks to Putview Books, always helpful. And as always, we look forward to diving in deeper to what it takes to play elite tournament golf.